Welcome to the Greener Way podcast, a show about people, planet, and purpose, and how investors and corporate leaders push forward in a complex world.
Joining us for this conversation on the Greener Way is Brighter Super Head of Listed Equities and ESG, Fiona Mann, to talk about the fund's approach to ESG and what high performance means in a variety of settings. Fiona, thank you so much for joining us. Can you introduce yourself and your role a little bit more?
Absolutely. So first thing I'll say is please call me Fee. Only my mother calls me Fiona when she's cranky at me, so Fee. And so my role at Brighter Super is head of listed equities. So that covers Australian and global equities, so both parts of that portfolio, and also head of ESG and sustainable investing across all asset classes. So essentially it's quite cool actually. Myself and my team, we've got our fingers in everybody's pie. We play in everyone's sandpit across the whole portfolio, and we actually press the button on the equity investments. So it's a really interesting role because you are actually investing the assets as well as looking at the sustainable ESG side of everything in the portfolio.
Excellent. So Fee, how did you come to this blending of listed equities and ESG? Are you an ESG professional by training, or is this something that sort of came upon you as you mounted the levels on portfolio management?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think I started life way back when as an equities analyst. So that's my background. And I guess back then we were looking for sustainable earnings in companies. And that's sustainable with a little S, not a big S. Mm-hmm. And then as time went by and ESG started to raise its head, sort of early 2000s, goodness, I'm showing my age there, early 2000s. And, you know, we started to have the more focus on, you know, the PRI and things that were happening in that space. And I guess I started to have an interest in ESG. And then when I had the opportunity to combine the two, it was an absolute, you know, no-brainer to put the two together. And I think when I started in this role, which was, you know, three years ago, ESG was still, you know, it was still sort of growing. ESG has moved so quickly and sustainable investing has moved so quickly. And way back when, equities was the area where, you know, there was more reporting, there was more transparency. So it was kind of a bit of a natural fit, really.
Mm. And so what does this mean in terms of your actual function, Fee? Are you involved with, does Brighter Super take a role in sort of active engagement? Are you evaluating, you know, the companies from that small S and I suppose larger S? Or I don't know how we label this anymore, sustainability.
Look, I think you label it in what is what I call fit for purpose and appropriate for what you have and what you're trying to achieve and what you can achieve. So what we can achieve as, you know, a smaller fund. I mean, we're not a $200 billion fund. We're, you know, a $32 billion fund. So what it essentially means is we manage externally. So we don't manage assets in-house. So that means that I'm looking for managers to put in the portfolio who have ESG integration through their portfolios, which fits with what we want out of our ESG strategy. And also members' best financial interest is key. So as with my investor hat on, we obviously want them to produce returns, but we want them to be, you know, very good. And ESG becomes just the way they do things.
Interesting to know. You said that you're a smaller fund, but you're not quite as small as you used to be at Brighter Super. You've sort of ridden the wave of a few mergers through your time, Fee. How have the mergers that you've transacted to become Brighter Super impact on how you approach listed equities investments, ESG, sustainability writ large?
Yeah, it's been an adventure, a roller coaster, a journey. an odyssey, perhaps. So I think one thing, we're the merger of three funds. So back in 2021, actually the day that your future super legislation came into play, we merged LGIA Super and Energy Super, which was a great timing. So not only did we have to deal with that, we had so when you merge two funds, you think about, you know, the custody, the admin, the investment portfolios, the culture, the staff, but also you've got ESG and sustainable investing. And that was still kind of growing with the two funds because they were two smaller funds. And so what you do is you sit back and you think about what do you want the bigger fund to look like from an ESG perspective. And sometimes that comes to you straight away. Sometimes it comes as you build out portfolios and you get more resources and, you know, you bed down things. And I think you can take the best from both sides. Mm. And then, you know, take the best and then add what you want the fund to be as Brighter Super going forward. And then we, of course, had Suncorp come in as well. And so that created another, you know, leg to the story. And so we take, you know, the good ESG things, you know, the good managers, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And that's how you sort of create a new pathway. So you do it in portfolios, you do it in culture. Mm-hmm. You also do it in the sustainable investing side. Mm. And I think we have really come leaps and bounds in the sustainable investing space over the last, you know, sort of 12 months, and we've got more staff, and it's just, yeah, with you mentioned stewardship before, and that is something that we have generally always relied on our managers to do. Mm-hmm. And we pick managers who are, you know, they have to have certain barriers and hurdles that they get over in the stewardship and active engagement space. Mm. And we're actually just currently now building out a strategy so we can actually start to, you know, look at that in a bit more depth ourselves. Mm. So, you know, there's lots of exciting things happening and, you know, sustainable investing just never stays still, as you know.
It's another wave to ride, Fee. So I'm really curious about this one because I think to me, you know, one of the threads that's really emerged and is only getting stronger over the past 2 years is this, I think, increasing pressure on funds and then on external fund managers to define what stewardship is and how it adds value, particularly for member outcomes. Is this playing into sort of your thinking, as you were just saying, about how you're approaching stewardship at Brighter Super? And yeah, how are you handling this?
Yeah, look, I think, as I said, it's still very new and we're still, you know, at the start of this one. But I think we don't believe in divestment. Mm. So we don't believe in divestment unless it is, you know, something that is, you know, mandated or something that, you know, is legislated. So when we start with that premise, yep. And basically you have essentially two options. It's either a portfolio construction, divestment, underweight, overweight option, or it's, you know, engaging with the business and trying to assist and you know, get some active, you know, change happening. Mm. So we know that, you know, that can work. And we also know that working with other groups and, you know, AXI is one that, you know, we are members of and, you know, they are doing a lot of work in this space. And to do stewardship properly on your own in a team takes a lot of people. So you have to work, you know, with someone else. So, I mean, we will approach it in the way that, you know, we will look at where are the risks in the fund. We'll look at which things are important to our members because our members, you know, are vital to everything we do. So members' best financial interest is the number one reason that I get up in the morning. So, you know, that's probably what's driving things at the moment. And, you know, we are looking to engage in spaces that are important to us, are important to our members, and also are important to the performance of the fund.
Now, I talked about this before in the intro here. You're someone who's dealt with high performance across a number of careers, Fee. I think one of the things that stood out to me when I was first getting to know you a little bit is the fact that you've had a robust second career as a sports dietitian. How'd you end up retraining in this field? And are there any similarities between supporting athletes with their nutritional needs and managing an equities portfolio?
Yeah, well, yes, that's an interesting one. So I'll take the first question first. I've been an endurance athlete for many, 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 many years. Mm. And I, you know, at one point, you know, 20 years ago, I was, sort of, you know, trying to do things a little bit more seriously. And I thought I'll go see a sports dietitian. I thought that's really cool. Mm. I like that. I'd like to know a bit more about that. Maybe that'll help. And being the sort of person I am, I thought, well, you know, I don't just want to like read up on it. I want to go and try and be one. And luckily I was at a stage in my career where I could do that. My son was of an age where I probably could need a bit more flexibility to study and you know, be around him for school. Mm. And I was involved in a business at that stage as well, which I could still have a little bit of involvement in, but did stand back. And so I went back to uni and became a sports dietitian and ran a business with athletes mainly. Mm-hmm. And I only really actually I employed dietitians in that for a while and I only really closed that down probably recently. I still see the odd patient just because talking about sports dietetics and nutrition and endurance athletes it's not hard work for me. So for someone to pay me to do that, that's great. It also is something I love reading and learning about. So, you know, that's how I ended up doing that. And obviously, you know, always knew I'd come back into finance and bringing some of the things I learned from doing that career was really interesting. One of the things that you learn when you're in that job is you learn how to talk to people. You learn how to, you're basically being a counsellor at some particular stage. You learn how to make things that are complex simple. Mm-hmm. So explain things to people, you know, complicated things, you know, about, you know, your physiology. And asking questions and learning how to question people, I think, has really helped in manager selection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to really understand that people and not ask that, because people drive investments, people drive portfolios. Even quant portfolios are driven somewhere down the track by people. Yep. So if you trust your people and understand what motivates them and how they think and trust your managers, then that's really important. And I think that's a skill that, you know, just taking that sort of career diversion really helped mm-hmm. me with. You know, I mean, my teenage son at one point, you know, when he was one of those horrible teenagers, said to me, imagine where you could be in your career if you hadn't gone and done that. And I'm like, oh, I actually thought I was kind of doing okay. But, you know, but I do think, and it made me stop and think, what did I actually bring from that? And so that was something I bought from there. But if you think about the second part of your question, I was laughing because there is a lot of similarities. So essentially, you know, athletes are always basically they're very detailed focused. Mm. They're looking for the next thing that's going to improve, or, you know, they're always looking for another outcome, new information. But one of the things is sports nutrition is very much about risk and return.
Mm.
And so you've got to think about, you know, what's the risks? The risks are doing something different nutritionally, you know, or having to react quickly to something. You know, you're in a race and you drop your nutrition, you make a decision not to go back and get it,
mm-hmm.
You change your breakfast, you do something different.
Mm-hmm.
You don't quite grab that last bit of water, or you're trying a different product. Now, sometimes that can be a great return.
Mm-hmm.
Other times you can spend the next how many hours in a little pain cave wishing that you were done with this particular event. So, you know, and markets are, and investing is like that. You judge your risk and return, and, you know, sometimes, or hopefully more times than not, you know, it pays off.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes you go, okay, that didn't quite work. So it's very, in a way, they're very similar. And athletes are neurotic. Investors tend to be quite neurotic. So I think given I'm both, I'm not sure what that makes me. But, it's there's plenty of people around who will actually say, yeah, that's right, she is. But, you know, I think that's, you know, that's there is a lot of similarities between them.
Mm.
So, and not saying I don't ever get things wrong, but, you know, we all do.
Look, I love that I love how matter of fact you are about, well, I'm interested in sports, in sports nutrition, so I retrained as a dietitian. I was interested in sports nutrition, and the only thing I learned was to never experiment with your energy gels the day of a half marathon.
Yes, I would definitely not recommend that. And I can also tell you, don't wear something in a race like a half Ironman that you haven't ever worn before or washed,
because
that can end up in tears as well, as I found out last weekend. However,
however, past performance is not an indicator of future return, and we will triumph and carry on, shall we?
Spot on. And you know, you learn from your mistakes, and you know, you reconstruct the portfolio and you get up and you go again.
Lose a bit of skin, take a bit of a haircut, it's all in a day.
exactly. Skin grows back, so does hair.
Well, look, fortunately, right? So look, you already answered before what gets you up in the morning, that focus on member returns at Brighter Super. Anything else that gets you out of bed aside from, I think there was a time I was following you on Strava and you were doing 100-kilometer rides before sunrise. Anything else? And what keeps you awake at night, conversely?
Okay. So, I mean, what gets me up in the morning, which generally is around about, you know, sort of 4 o'clock, if not before, is training and mm-hmm. what I've got to do. And, you know, I've always got an event coming up, and it's probably fear that you're not going to perform and you've got to practice and train. And so training gets me up. I mean, you know, I spend a couple of hours most days, more on weekends training. That's what gets me up. So when you ask me what keeps me up at night, given that got me up, not very much. I'm ready to go to bed at like 8 o'clock most nights. But in all seriousness, so what keeps me up? I mean, my mind is pretty busy most of the time. So sometimes it's solving. Generally, it's problem solving. If I'm sort of how do I make portfolios more sustainable? How do I, you know, have that negligible impact on risk and return, but that positive impact in the sustainability space?
Mm.
Sometimes, you know, it can be as simple as gee, you know, did I feed the dog tonight? Or does my car need a wash? But, you know, or sometimes it can be more complex, like, you know, trying to reverse engineer tracking your, you know, numbers in portfolios and things. So, yeah, it's a number of things. But, you know, always I think, you know, I solve a lot of my problems when I am training, like, mm-hmm. you know, depending on what they are. So, you know, out there you tend to go, oh, that's a great idea. I need to quickly remember that. But, yeah, most of the time it's just how can I do things better for our members on both a performance side and also making portfolios more sustainable, because you've got to remember that the more sustainable we can make our portfolios across all asset classes, the better that we'll be able to return retirement, you know, savings to members down the track.
There's nothing like when you reach that that nice steady cadence of a good long run or a good long bike ride, and the clarity that brings for some of your problems, is it?
Oh, it's incredible. I highly recommend. In fact, I actually sort of suggested to someone here I should get a treadmill desk, but I think I'd probably just annoy all my staff.
Talk about your tracking error, you know, the steady roll of the footfall.
Exactly. So, I haven't quite got that one across the line yet, but I'll keep trying.
Oh, look, I think it'll have a negligible impact on admin fees for Brighter Super members. So I think I'll go for it.
Spot on. I will put you down as a referee on my application form to the expense committee.
Feel free, Fiona. With that, Fee Man, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation on The Greener Way.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Greener Way podcast. If you liked today's show, remember to rate and review us on your podcast platform and make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Any feedback? Contact us on podcast@fssustainability.com.au. I'm Rachel Allen Backus.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only.
The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests.
It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances.
FS Sustainability operates under an Australian Financial Service License and the exemption made available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect to any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional.
For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.